Welcome to the next session of the Link Client Developer Roundtable. Today we are going to spend some time talking about the new Link Server 2013 topology that you'll all be deploying in your organizations. The format of the day is fairly simple. We have a speaker who I'll introduce in a moment. He'll take you through some slides and a demonstration. And during the course of his demonstration, you can ask questions about what he's talking about via the IM panel. And we'll catch those questions. And then at the conclusion of the presentation, then we'll go through the questions one by one and give you answers. And before we get started, though, let me just tell you about an upcoming roundtable. Next Tuesday, that would be the 24th, we're going to have Marcelo Farjala, who is a program manager for the Link Client platform. He's going to talk about what's new in the Link Client SDK. So for now, I'd like to introduce you to Anand Lakshmi Ranayanan. And he's a senior program manager lead at Microsoft, and he's going to tell you about the Link Server 2013 architecture and management. So take it away, Anand.
Thank you. I'm a program manager on the Link 2013 product team, and I work on manageability and data center features. I'm here to talk about architecture and management. This session is kind of a foundational session, I'd say, that talks about what is new and what's changed in Link 2013. Today we're going to spend more time about the backend pieces and how they work. And we're not going to be looking at any programmable APIs in this session. That's coming in future sessions on Link 2013. All right, with that, let's get started. Today I wanted to walk through three investment areas specifically. One is these are the areas where we've had significant changes from Link 2010. High availability and scale. We have a new model for doing both of these, so we're going to talk about that. Disaster recovery, we've significantly improved from the Link 2010 disaster recovery solution, and we'll go through that in detail. And we're also going to spend time talking about what are the topology changes from Link 2010. The key takeaways I want the audience to have is with 1 and 2, the bullets that we're talking about, Link 2013 now will support enterprise-grade resiliency. So it's a big step forward, and it's a big administration feature, manageability feature for admins. So we're going to talk about what that feature is and how it's designed and how it works, and maybe you see a little demo as well. And then there are some things we're not going to be talking about today because the session is only about a half hour. And all the tool set that we had for Link 2010, we continue to have for Link 2013. And I'm not going to walk you through the changes in the tool sets, the new features that we've added in Topology Builder or Control Panel or PowerShell and so on. There are lots of new features and management scenarios that got added, but I'm going to focus on the architecture parts today. In terms of expectations from the audience, I'm assuming that this audience is familiar with Link 2010 and the whole deployment and administration model for Link 2010, which includes having the central management store as the backend for all configuration and topology data, the tools that we use, Topology Builder, for planning and for creating your deployment, the setup tools, Control Panel UI for managing and administering, as well as the command line interface PowerShell. So we're not going to be walking through those today. I'm assuming you are familiar with those. And then this is an architecture session, so we're not just going to talk about features, but we're going to ask, why did we do it and how does it work and so on. So we're going to spend some time kind of behind the scenes in the session. Okay? All right, first topic, high availability and scale. And we're introducing this concept called bricks. And so let's talk about what bricks are. So what is the new Link 2013 brick model? And before we look at that, first, let's look at why we went down the bricks path. In 2013, we're adding new workloads, new features, multi-view video, XMPP, multi-view features, a more functional ELBA. These are small examples of the feature set that we add. And every time we add a new feature like this, the server needs to pony up more resources per user. And that affects the number of users we can serve out of each front-end server. So if you're familiar with Link 2010, we had, I think, a 10,000 users per server limit. Or it might have been 8,000 later in the documentation as well. But so that was the limit that we had in 2010. And what we wanted to do was, because it's harder to improve the scale on each server significantly with all these new workloads, we wanted to add more servers to the pool. And one of the challenges to adding that was the SQL backend was a bottleneck, and it was preventing the scale out. And we were not able to add more than 10 servers to a pool, because every transaction, when you add a contact, when you change your present status, or any such transaction had to be committed to the database first. And because there are so many transactions in this real-time system, the more machines you added, the harder it became to, and things slowed down. So that's basically kind of the background. And the last part is the HA solution for the database that we supported in Link 2010 was SQL clustering, and that solution was pretty expensive. That's what we heard from our customers. So we also were looking for a more cost-effective alternative on that side as well. So the solution that we came up with for Link 2013 is this idea called a brick model. And in the brick model, you can think of each brick as kind of a foundational piece that actually is exactly the same as the next brick. So you can just grow your capacity by adding more bricks into your building or your Link deployment, in this case, your front-end tool. So that's kind of the idea of bricks. And the significant change from 2010 is now front-end servers actually master user state. So all your user data and your dynamic state is mastered on the front-ends now. So if you look on the front-end box, you will, in 2013, you will see the RTC database and other databases on the box, on the local box. And not only that, the front-end servers keep three copies of every user's data. And they keep three copies of data on three on other front-ends. So that for every user, there are three copies of data on the front-ends of the system. And we basically decoupled updates to the front-end and updates to the back-end. So periodically, each front-end server syncs to the back-end on a loosely coupled basis. And we call this a lazy write. A lazy write is basically, we write every minute or every 2 minutes based on configuration. And so the DB is kept in sync, but the number of database operations to the Link backend is a lot less than Link 2010. So periodically, every front-end syncs state. And the reason we sync state to the backend database is in the event of a disaster recovery situation where all the front-ends are down, then we can recover the data from the backend. So that's kind of the high-level view of the brick model. So here is a pictorial view of the brick model. On the left, you have the Link 2010 pool. Basically, we could go to a maximum of 10 servers. And the SQL backend at the top on the orange square is where all our business logic ran, as well as the data storage. And you could go up to a maximum of 10 servers. On the right, on the green side, we have the Link 2013 brick architecture. Here we have 1 to n servers. We don't know what n is, the number of servers in a pool, yet, because we're doing our performance tests, and when we are close to releasing the product, along with the product release, you will also know how many servers that we can put in each pool. Here, what we're doing is we're doing a bunch of the business logic on the front ends, and we're using the backend store purely as a data store, or what we call a blob store. And there is very little intelligence in the blob store. It's just data saving and data retrieval. So that's essentially capturing the change in 2013. And the reason we did this, we already covered that. It allows us to add more front ends per pool. So next, with the brick model, now let's see how high availability works in this new brick model. So if you're familiar with Link 2010, each user is assigned a home pool, and then within the home pool, we dynamically pick a home server for each user. So now let's see how this has changed in Link 2030. Now, internally, when I say internally, I mean admin does not need to manage this. Link users are mapped into what we call user groups, or simply groups. Now, each group is dynamically assigned by the system to three front-end servers within a pool. So assuming you have three or more servers in your Enterprise Edition front-end pool, each group is assigned to three front-ends. So those three are going to have a copy of the data for all the users within that group. One of them is a primary, and then there's a secondary and a tertiary. Now, when the user logs in, when a user from this group logs in, the primary is the one that's going to accept the connection and start servicing, let the user log on and start servicing the user's requests. The secondary and tertiary are going to have copies of data about the user, and every change the data to user's data is synchronously replicated to the secondary and tertiary as well. So all three copies of data are always up to date. And that's the idea. And then the next bullet is if the primary server associated with the user dies, then this group basically will fail over to the secondary. So, and since all the writes are synchronous, so we know that there is no data loss. So the user's client simply signs into the secondary and starts functioning again. And the writes to the backend database actually occur periodically. Right now the interval is 1 minute, and I think it's configurable as well. And then when a server dies and it's out of commission for some time, the system automatically reassigns the groups to the existing servers so that this three-copy system continues again. So that's kind of the high-level view. One other thing that I want to add is different groups will have different primary and secondary and tertiary. So, you know, server 1 would be primary for group 1 and group 2, and server 2 would be the primary for group 3 and group 4 and so on. So that way the load is spread out, and when a server dies, these groups get assigned to reassigned on different secondaries. So that's a load balancing activity as well. That's kind of the high-level view. Here is a pictorial view of this, and we'll try to see if we can do a quick demo of this as well. So here we have a Link user, Bob, who's signed on to front-end 1, and the three copies, and the three copies are front-end 1, 2, and 3. Now the user is signed into front-end 1, and everything's working fine. Now if the pool database back-end goes down, at this point, there is very little effect on the system. All users continue to work, and all conferences and all of that stuff continues to work. Now, all the data gets backed up on the front end, so when the pool backend is eventually restored, then the sync will happen and the backend will be caught up. But this is very different from Link 2010. In Link 2010, if the pool backend were to go down, at that point, users will not be able to sign into any of the pools. So this is different. So if the pool backend goes down, there's very little impact to the system immediately. So the next part is, if front-end 1 goes down, then, hey, how come my text box is showing up on my slide?
There it comes. It's just a slow replication.
So when the primary goes down, the user's client detects it. It tries to see if the primary is available for some timeout period, and if it's not, it automatically switches to the secondary, and the user re-signs in, and because the data is fully synchronously replicated, it's up to date, and the user just carries on. So that's kind of the quick idea. Let's see if we can do a demo of this real quick. Let me pull up the demo. Okay. Do I have to exit? PowerPoint's presentation mode? Okay, that one's, I'm sharing my desktop, but that one's only showing, are you sharing it? No, right? That one's only showing.
You're sharing. Are you sharing the window that?
Actually, my sharing just died, so maybe that's why. No, it is. I'm sharing my screen.
Mm-hmm.
And on my screen, I have the... And that's not working. How is that possible?
Who's moving the mouse just then?
This is me.
That's on the... So let me stop sharing. I'm going to try to share again.
Okay.
I apologize for the, for the glitch. Let me... share desktop.
So we're just switching over to a different sharing. Okay. So one moment.
Okay. So this is a test topology that we have. I wanted to quickly demonstrate the high availability feature here. So this is topology builder, the new version. In this topology, there are two pools, pool 1 and pool 2, pool 0 and pool 1, sorry. And we have a user who's associated with pool 0 right now. It's got three front-end servers, server 1 and server 2. So that's kind of the configuration. And then what I'm going to show you is this client. This is the Link 15 client that is currently signed on, this user. And I can figure out not just the pool that the user is homed on, but also the particular server that the user is connected to by controlled right-click and choosing configuration information. And if I did that, one of the settings that I can see is server1.vdomain.com. That is the specific server that this user and this client is signed into. So now this user belongs to a user group. And I think I mentioned that the user group concept is an internal concept, so administrators don't need to manage it. They don't necessarily need to know about it, but it's very important if you want to understand and program against the system, how the system is actually working under the scenes. So I'm going to get user pool info. This is a new commandlet that we're adding in Link 2013 for this user 30. And I'm going to get the primary and the replica machines for that user. So let's run this. And this commandlet says the primary is server 1, which is accurate because the user is actually signed into server 1 right now. And the backups are server 2 and server. So those are the two backups. So that's the information we were looking for. And now let's go ahead and simulate a HA failure by shutting down server 1. And I'm going to do this with the stop CS window service with a computer name of server1.domain.com. So this effectively is going to start shutting down the RTC server. As you can see, the client signed out at this point, and it's going to auto try to sign in. And it has a built-in timeout system. And then when it knows that server 1 is unreachable, it automatically signed into a next server in that list, and now it's signed in and has the contact list. So hopefully we've had some bugs in the beta version. Hopefully it will show you now which server the client is signed into. Actually, it is not showing pool 0 because of a bug in the system that we're looking at in beta 2. It is supposed to show you the server that it's connected to. So there's another way to find out that. So because of this bug, I had that open and ready for you. So the other way to find out is using Windows Fabric. And Windows Fabric, well, the next slide is about what Windows Fabric is. But I'm gonna show you first that the user that we're talking about, that user 30, belongs to this routing group, this is the name of the routing group. It's a GUID, and we need to know it starts at 98EA. And if I look up the Windows Fabric status right now, which is the commandlet that I'm running, it's going to show you which server it's active on. I apologize, it's a lot brighter on my laptop screen. So if I scrolled up, I can see that it's on a secondary role, 98EA, it's on a secondary role in server.vdomain.com, that's the name of the machine. And if I scroll down, it's on a primary role here on server 2. So that's basically what's happened with this switch. So the client is now signed in to the new server. Okay, I'm gonna take all questions in the end. I see a bunch of questions that are being posted, but I'm gonna take all of those in the end. So that's my quick demo. Let me switch back to the slides. Hang on. Okay. All right. So behind the scenes, we're using this technology in the Link team called Windows Fabric. And what is Windows Fabric? It's a distributed computer, distributed system management utility. This is from Microsoft. It's an internal tool that we use, and it replicates data between the nodes, and it also helps monitor and manage server health, or in our case, the pool health. It takes care of the replication and state management, and it's transparent to the administrator. And I say that for the most part, because the replication should be invisible and up to date in regular deployments. That's what we expect. But sometimes there are issues with latencies and so on, in which case the admin might need to step in and see what's going on. And this is a core component. Now, all front ends are built on top of the Link brick architecture. And this allows us to scale out, as well as provides a new HA system, high availability system. Now, with the next little bullet, I know we're really pressed for time, so patching in this new world with bricks is done using upgrade domains. And what is an upgrade domain? It's a administrator-defined group of machines that the admin wants to patch together. So when we declare an upgrade domain and put member machines in it, then Windows Fabric will make sure that it doesn't place the primary, secondary, and tertiary for any group on those set of machines. So you can take all of those machines down, patch them, and put them back. So we now have a rolling patch story in Link 2013, which is new as well. So that's on the front-end side. And on the back-end side, we are now switching to SQL mirroring with Link 2013. It's our default recommended high availability solution. It requires SQL 2008 R2 or higher, and it's fully integrated. The mirroring creation and management is integrated into our tools, Topology Builder and PowerShell, the management PowerShell. So, and we have commandlets for you that can create the mirroring relationship during install and upgrade and so on. So we're basically moving to mirroring. And when your SQL backend is mirrored, we just saw that SQL backend is not critical to real-time functioning of the pool. So we have a few choices on the failover. We can have a manual or admin-triggered failover for the SQL backend, or if you install a SQL witness, that enables an automatic failover. This is basically SQL technology from SQL team, so and how you can configure switching between the mirrors during a failure. So, and then SQL clustering, we will continue to support SQL clustering for this release. If you are migrating from OCS 2007 R2 or Link 2010, you might have set up a SQL cluster for high availability. So we'll continue to support it in this release for migration scenarios only. But from subsequent releases, we will basically deprecate the feature. So that's the plan for SQL clustering. Okay, so in the maybe 5-8 minutes left, I'm going to cover disaster recovery and topology real quick. So another brand new feature in Link 2013 is improved disaster recovery. And it's brand new because the old solution that we had, which was metro site resiliency, is completely being changed to a new solution. It is one of the most wanted features. Customers tell us about it all the time. They want a solution with SLA for disaster recovery and restore. and stretching pools across data centers and the metropolitan site resiliency solution was found to be expensive. So we wanted a lower TCO solution. And what we've done with Link 2013 is a more cost-effective HA and DR solution. We saw the HA solution, or we'll see the DR solution as well. We've removed the dependency on any SAN-based storage. So we don't need shared storage that spreads data centers anymore for a disaster recovery solution. So all of this is done in software, and it's managed by Link software, so no expensive network equipment or hardware that spans data centers. And also, what we've done is, in Link 2010, we had the branch, the voice resiliency feature, which gave you dial tone in the event of losing connectivity between branch and central locations. We've extended that further with the new disaster recovery story. So in the event of a pool failure, not only will you continue to get dial tone, but now you have the other UC features, workloads lighting up as well. IM presence, conferencing, mobility, all of these will continue to work from the backup pool. And we'll see how that is in the next three slides. So this is a high-level kind of architecture slide. And our reference topology, I need to update this slide with the new reference topology that our doc team has come up with. But the reference topology basically has Link pools in two data center sites. And there are, there's two sites here, site one and site two, and a single AD spanning Active Directory forest spanning those sites. Every pool that we put on site one, there is a pair on site two. And so that's what those arrows are showing in the picture. So pool one is paired with pool six, and pool two is paired with pool seven, and so on. So these are paired using a backup relationship, which is an active-active relationship. And what I mean by that is users, both pool one and pool six are active and serving users. So that's the active-active relationship. Each pool, basically, you want to provision at 50% of the load. Given a disaster could happen at any time, all the load goes to the other backup pool. So that's kind of the idea. And when you create this backup relationship, backup service starts replicating data between these two paired pools in real time. And in the event the home pool is dead, users are rerouted to the backup pool with admin intervention. So that is the essence of pool recovery. And let's see how that works. So here we have two pools in two data centers, data center one and data center two. And these two pools both are active. That means users can sign in to those pools right, you know. And in addition, the administrator has also set up the backup relationship between those pools. And what that means is that pool 1's user data is copied into pool 2, and pool 2's user data is being replicated into pool 1 as well. So both pools actually have data from the other side. Now, at this point, let us say we have a pool-level failure. So the pool 1 goes out of commission for whatever reason. And what the administrator needs to do at this point is, once the administrator detects that pool 1 is down, using monitoring or SCOM-based alerting solution, the administrator will run this step called invoke pool failover, which essentially signals to the system that pool 1 is in failover state and users of pool 1 can now sign into pool 2. After this, the users are now getting service out of pool 2. The invoke pool failover is a pretty quick commandlet. It executes in a couple of minutes. I want to say less than 5 minutes. So at that point, you've restored your service. Your users are able to sign into the other pool. And as an administrator, now you can take a long time to figure out what's wrong with pool one, how to restore it, the network issues, the hardware failures. So you basically are able to restore the service very quickly, and then you can do your detection and troubleshooting and bring pool one online at a later time. So now let's say it took 2 days for the administrator to figure out what's wrong with pool one and get it fixed. So now pool one is back up after a couple of days, and now the sync is starting again, and so data is now getting synchronized again between the two pools. But the pool is still in failover mode, which means all the users are still getting served out of pool 2. So the administrator can verify that everything is okay with pool 1, data synchronization is caught up, and then at that point, he would invoke the invoke pool failback, which would then move the users back to pool 1. So that's kind of the model here. So I'm going to answer some questions at the end, including why is this automatic. So our recovery goals, I'm going to let you read the slide, but the takeaway is the RTO is 15 minutes. That's the time to recovery is 15 minutes, and the recovery point is the amount of data that we lose is 15 minutes. These are measures based on our lab results. So these are our SLAs based on our constraints. Your SLA may vary depending on latency between your environments and so on. It's very key what latency is between those two pools in those different data centers. You may have a different SLA based on your actual observed conditions. And all of these numbers are calculated based on the time that you detect and start the failover process. So there is a period of time where you don't know that the pool one has failed. Maybe you got an alert. Maybe synthetic transactions failed. And all this time is starts once you invoke the pool failover. So then the RTO and RPO are 15 minutes. That's our design goal for this release. And then quickly in the next 4 minutes, I'm going to talk about some topology changes. It's kind of a summary of what we've already seen, but there's also a couple of other things that we have. So we already looked at the BRICS model. One of the consequences of BRIC model is we no longer need to have a separate AV conferencing server role, which I think we recommended for more than 10,000 users in 2010. So we no longer need that. So that's co-located now with the front ends. You no longer need a monitoring and archiving server role. That is also co-located on the front ends. And the databases can be co-located on a SQL backend that you choose, depending on your performance needs. And for archiving, we now have an integrated archiving with Exchange 2013, as well as we continue to have the option of writing your archive data into SQL like we used to in 2010. So that continues to be an option, and we have a new integration with Exchange as well. We also have taken integration with the web application companion WAC server. So when you look at PowerPoint in Link, and that's being rendered by the WAC servers. So, and it is required in Link 2013.10. So WAC is required if you wanted to basically present meeting content, upload PowerPoints, and so on. So, and then the next set of changes are, we now have the XMPP gateway integrated into the front end and the edge. So that's no longer a separate role as well. We already talked about SQL mirroring instead of SQL clustering. And then we already talked about pairing pools for disaster recovery. And then the last set of changes here are, we now have a new OAuth model for server-to-server authentication between Exchange and SharePoint and so on. So you get details of that in a different session. We also have support for hybrid, which is the ability for you to combine your on-premise and online deployments. Basically, it gives you the ability to have a link split between on-premises and online, as well as other workloads like Exchange and SharePoint in different combinations. I'm not going to cover the details of that in this session. Persistent chat or group chat, the new name is persistent chat, is now fully integrated into the manageability experience, including you can manage it from the link control panel, PowerShell works against it, Topology Builder has it, and so on. So it's entirely integrated into the administration story. And the last point is the director role is no longer in our reference topology because of some of the BRIC model changes. We no longer need a director pool for load balancing purposes. But if you still have two-zone security requirements, and you need a director role for security reasons, we still support it as a supported role. But for load balancing purposes, we are no longer needing a director role. That is, I think, the end of the presentation. So at this point, we can open up for questions.
No? Okay. Okay.
All right.
Okay, so we need to put the questions on the screen for everyone to see. We can go through them one at a time. Do you have it on a...
Okay, yeah, we could do it that way.
Yeah. I'll read through the questions, but I want everyone to see what we're answering as we answer them.
All right.
That's fine. Okay, you can make that a little bit larger.
this is the stage, so you want to move the link window out, bring your document window in. Probably the audience is seeing it fine. It's just that we are not seeing it.
Right.
Okay. It might be okay.
Is everyone able to see this okay? Oh, they want to zoom in.
Actually, Aman, you can see the questions pretty well from there, right?
Yes, I can.
Okay, why don't we do this?
Could you do a full screen again?
Okay, there we go.
Yeah, there we go.
Okay.
Right.
So, I'll read the question, and then you
can answer. I can just go through the question.
Oh, that's fine. That's even better, actually.
So, I'm going to go through the questions that we just got on the IM. So, the first question is, are active calls on FE1 dropped when a user is switched to FE2? Well, if it's a peer-to-peer call, then it's not dropped. If it's a conference, then there will be a blip in the conference, so your client may get disconnected and reconnected. But as the end user, you may or may not see the blip. You may not see the blip if the sign-in is so fast that the conference just continues. But if the sign-in is slower for some reason, then you would see the client sign out and sign back in, but it would be into the conference. There would be a join conference button if it took too long, but otherwise you wouldn't even know that the conference dropped out. Next question, does the failover include maintaining active conferences for co-located AVMCU? Yes, it does. So we don't have a dedicated AVMCU anymore, so yes, the failover includes AVMCU-hosted meetings as well, conferences as well. How does the AHA work with only two front-end servers? Are we recommended to run three front-ends at a minimum? The answer is, if you have just two front-ends, then you get only two copies of data. So that is a kind of the minimum case. So we recommend that you run with three front-ends. But it also works with two front-ends, except that your HA story is now, there's only one backup copy. So it is a choice that you have to make based on your costs of running Link. Is Link 2013 multi-tenant capable baked in? Answer is no. We have a Link 2010 hoster pack that we had shipped already, and that is the multi-tenant version. Link 2013 for customers will continue to not have multi-tenancy enabled. For that, you'll need to you may need to get the next version of Link 2013 hoster pack, which I don't know what the plans for the release and stuff like that are. With the new HA scenarios, how does this change the behavior of load balancers compared to 2010? It does not change the behavior of load balancers right now, at least in this release. We continue to support HLB and DNSLB. That is not changed. If you were using DNSLB, you will still need HLB for web services, and that has not changed either. The change that happens is once the HLB routes you to a pool available server, then you get redirected to the right home server, and then you can sign into the home server. So we are on the path, architecturally speaking, to reduce the need of load balancers, but we haven't completed that in this release. So, but definitely that's something that we are thinking in our roadmap. Web components will need the HLB as well. Next one, do clients still connect to a pool FQDN? Yes, that's correct. And once they connect to the pool FQDN, then they get redirected to the specific server. Are there any implications with monitoring server in this architecture? Still one monitoring server. Monitoring server database is still one. the monitoring server architecture has not changed, other than the fact that the monitoring server is co-located on the front ends. The DB itself can take data from multiple pools, and that hasn't changed. Next set of questions, disaster recovery. Will there be survival branch appliances in 2013? I believe yes. So we're continuing to have SBAs. The next question, prior to running the invoke pool failover command, will VoI still function in an outage as it does in Link 2010 backup registrars? The answer is yes. If you have a pool backup relationship and a resiliency backup, registrar backup relationship, those two will still continue to work. If you're homed on the central pool, though, then it wouldn't work. There is you can only have a registrar resiliency relationship with one branch server or one other pool, and so that will continue to work. Next question. The pool failover has to be run manually. Is there no way to automatically failover when something blows up? The answer is yes, you have to run it manually. It is a PowerShell commandlet. It is pretty easy to automate if you want. SCOM has a PowerShell API SDK as well. So it is automatable. There is a reason that we haven't automated it out of the box. And the reason is disaster recovery is a pretty expensive operation. Especially when you have thousands of users connected and you invoke a pool failover, all users get kicked out and they have to re-sign in to the other pool, and that whole process for it to stabilize will take some time. To get back to steady state where every user is signed in, and might take 15 minutes, might take 20 minutes. So it is a pretty expensive operation, and there is also data loss involved. So unlike high availability, there is data loss when you do disaster recovery, because you only get data until the last successful sync has happened between the two backup pools. So we don't recommend that you do it unless you confirm that your source pool is dead. And that might actually require some triaging, some taking a look at the alerts, making sure, and then actually making a call that, yes, pool one is dead. There is nothing we can do to restore it. I'm going to trigger the invoke pool failover commandlet. So that requires some triaging and some ops process, and that is why we don't automate it. And that's why we don't automate it internally as well. So is it automatable? Sure, yeah, you can. But you may want to do that a few times manually first to see whether the decision to failover is accurate from your side. Topology. For co-location, is it the same deal with mediation server? Mediation server alone can still be separated out. I didn't call it out in my slide. That's because sometimes mediation servers need to be located geographically close to gateways. So with mediation servers, you still have the choice of either co-locating with the front ends or separating and have a standalone deployment near your PSTN gateway. I assume screen sharing does not require WAC. I think the answer is yes. I'm not an expert on this, but I think the answer is yes, and I can follow up on that. Do director servers have the same pool failover ability? And the answer is no. Director servers do not have pairing. Director servers, by definition, don't hold any user data. So they actually don't have synchronization. There are no users homed on directors, so they are stateless. So there's no synchronization, so they don't have the pool failover ability. So if you are using director servers, what we recommend is you have two director pools, pool one in site one or data center one, pool two in director pool two in site two, and you have a GTM solution so that the incoming traffic gets routed to the geographically closest pool. And if that goes down, then the DNS solution automatically routes it to the other director pool. So that's something that we'll want you to do it at the DNS level. For hybrid scenarios, would this include running a UCNA application in one DC and Link in another? I actually am not the expert at answering that question. So maybe we can defer that to Stefan or someone on the UCMA team to get that answered.
Yeah, and we'll have a UCMA center scheduled so we can cover those scenarios.
Okay. And did you want to switch back to the IM to see if there are more questions?
Yeah, we have quite a few follow-up questions here, so let me scroll up. Okay. So here's our next question.
Can servers be virtualized? Answer is yes. We continue to support virtualization. You cannot virtualize some servers and not virtualize some servers within a pool, within a edge pool or a mediation pool or a directive pool. Every pool has to be uniform. Or either all servers are virtualized or none of them are virtualized. But you can mix and match in your environment. So you can have a virtualized front-end pool but a physical edge server and so on, edge server pool and so on. For the HA scenarios, how does this relate to UCMA applications? I'm going to refer that to Stefan as well, or the UCMA session as well.
All right, so we're skipping some of these UCMA questions.
So I think we answered that. DNSLP, you still need HLB for web services. That continues to be true. Is there any change to the way how monitoring server collects call detail records? The answer is yes. Monitoring server now uses an internal technology called Link Storage Service, which runs on every front end to collect the call detail record. The actual schema of the call detail record, I don't think has significantly changed. It might have some new schema additions and some new attributes, but that hasn't significantly changed. But the way the data is collected is using a new Link Storage Service, and it has a output adapter to write it into SQL. So the records will still show up in your CDR or QoE database. So if you read off the database, you're fine. Why is invoke failover not automatic? We talked about that. Are there any implications to high conference usage with co-located roles? We have a need to commit conferences at 100-120% of the number of link users. This means that Linkron can do something like 10-to-1 relationship between FE and AV MCUs. Is there a reason that having a large number of front ends would be a problem? So I cannot answer that question right now because we don't know the final numbers for how many servers you can have in a pool. But the AV MCU functionality has also moved in along with the front end. So theoretically, you can have as many frontends as you need for your conferencing, as you want for your conferencing needs. In terms of the actual, like here is the maximum number of frontends, I don't have that answer right now. So we'll have to wait for performance testing to complete for that. How many internal groups are users placed into? Is it assumed that FE is never at maximum capacity? There are about, I think by default we create 20 user groups per pool, and then we start placing users, and then I think when they fill up, we may create dynamically more groups. I'm not actually sure. I think we start with 20, and I think we might stick to that. Is it assumed that FE is never at maximum capacity? Not necessarily. We don't assume that. We do have guidelines around how many, you know, based on recommended hardware and based on the user model, how many users we can home on an FE. But there's no software enforcement or an assumption that FE is not running at maximum capacity. Can a single front-end pool, can a single front-end pool be stretched across data centers with SQL and SQL Witness? We do not recommend that. So, we recommend that you have two pools and pair them. You can even pair standard edition servers, so you can have one box and pair them up too for DR. But we don't, the stretched pool idea, we are kind of not recommending that for Link 2013. If you're archiving to Exchange 2013, is IAM history retrieved differently? No, IAM history is a conversation history folder in your mailbox. That continues to exist. If you're archiving to Exchange 2013, then your archiving e-discovery services can run off your Exchange Archive store. So
we actually also have the Exchange web service, and there's a technical article on retrieving conversation history, which should be published now. So if you're interested in the details of that, do a search in MSDN library for Link 2013, Exchange 2013.
Okay. Awesome.
Nice. Okay, so all right. We have 5 minutes before we get kicked out. So
So, looks like we've got schedule here for our next roundtable sessions. Oh, we have another question there?
Yeah, we have more questions here. So let's just spend another two or three minutes
sure.
on questions.
Maximum number of conferences that a single server can handle. We don't know the answer yet. We are doing performance testing, so please stay tuned for product release for that information.
Okay.
Next question. In the same domain as 2010, both at RTM. When you say same domain, is that same Active Directory domain? Yes, it is supported. Yes, you can have 2010 and 2013 side by side in the same forest, in the same Active Directory domain, and you can move users from your 2010 pool to 2013 pool slowly. And our migration story has a specific sequence you have to follow to migrate from 2010 to 2013.
Okay, another question coming in here.
Link exchange is proposed in the order. Do we do exchange first? That's an interesting question. I'm gonna say a different answer. I want to say we test Link 2013 with both Exchange 2013 as well as Exchange 2010, Outlook 2010. So we know that the combination of Link 2013 and Exchange 2010 is supported. So then you make up your mind about what you want to upgrade first. Are any changes to requirements for the edge in the topology? Not really. Not significantly from Link 2010.
All right, let's take the last question here, and then we'll wrap up.
No, I cannot talk about Skype Federation.
Nice try.
Yeah, good question, though.
Okay, so let's...
All right, so, yeah, let's wrap up.
So let's scroll up to the schedule of... roundtable sessions here. I'm going to close by highlighting some of these great ones that are coming up. So I mentioned that the next Tuesday session is on the Link Client platform and the new changes. That's going to be a lot of fun. But below that, we have on July 26th a persistent chat SDK discussion. And that one, everyone who's interested in group chat or persistent chat really should show up to that. It's going to be a lot of interesting information there. We have only a few small changes to UCMA 4.0, but those topics are important to talk about. So if you do UCMA, you want to be certain to show up for that one. Async patterns in UCMA, as far as I know, they haven't changed, but it's still an intricate discussion. I think we should highlight some of the odd behaviors of async in that discussion. But I think we have... just the four scheduled there. We'll have more roundtable scheduled for the future, but I think that should keep everyone busy for a little while.